Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening. Happy 8th day of Sukkah. It's a pleasure to be here. We're here with Kirk this evening. And it is always great to be celebrating Sukkah. We had lamb this evening, and it was indeed wonderful. There is a just one comment politically before we move on. As you know, Yahweh asks us to walk away from politics and religion. And what I'm going to say might sound inconsistent with that, but I don't think it is. I am constantly encountering these days liberals politically. Now, there is the primary distinction between a liberal and a conservative politically is a liberal likes government. They want more government. Socialized medicine is good. Wealth redistribution is good. National control of business is good. The ability of the government to shut down liberty and livelihoods is good. I think those things are all bad. The definition of conservative is less government. And if God asks us to walk away from government, then less government is better than more government. So, while I don't endorse any candidate or any political party, I think it is consistent with the Torah to be a conservative, to want less government. And we are at a crossroads where, in this particular election, should the majority of people choose the liberal candidate, we are going to get more government. And more government is not going to be good. It's going to be astonishingly bad. Your thoughts, Kirk?
Well, I find it odd that so many people take that position, a liberal position like that, and is so anti-freedom. There's nothing freeing about more government. I mean, and if you want Yah's point of view, of course, it started with Samuel when he said, tell them what they're going to do when they pick Saul. I mean, but without sounding trite, I mean, it's just, we're in California. We pay a lot of state taxes.
Yeah, I think like almost 14% is the high watermark for California.
It's a big chunk.
Yeah, you know what the territory tax is for the Virgin Islands where I live?
No.
Well, let's put it this way. It's 14% below the high watermark for California.
Okay, that's good. But you know, California has paid this enormous amount of tax. from everybody's paycheck. We have the poorer schools.
And you pay enormous amounts of property tax, too.
Oh, I got my property tax. I just paid my property tax bill. It's gone up another $1,500 since we bought the house. So
you know what our property tax is here in the Virgin Islands?
I'm sure it's small.
Well, if you just paid $1,400 for your...
No, that was my increase. That's not what it was.
Oh, that was your increase, $1,400.
That was my...
Zero.
Well, I beat you by many, many thousands.
Zero.
That's a race I don't want to win.
We have really crappy roads. The utility doesn't function all that well. You have to have solar to offset the cost of the utilities. We have to have a generator to, you know, to kick in when the utilities fail, and you really need a four-wheel drive because the roads are filled with potholes.
Yeah,
but the living is
but
good.
Still.
You know, I wake up in the morning and the beautiful sunrises and their vibrant oranges flood through my my window, and I get outside and I'm just looking at the beautiful Caribbean Sea. And so, you know, it's a pretty good place to live for free.
Yeah. It's going to get crowded down that island. You keep talking like this, too.
Yeah, it will. You know, I'm just trying to prepare for the ultimate suka. I figure that if Leigh and I can live in paradise now, then we'll be all accustomed. And just go right at home when suka begins.
Easy transition.
It's just an easy transition to suka, and the Garden of Eden. If you choose.
Yeah, this is familiar.
That is if you like turquoise blue water, water that is so warm that it feels like a bathtub. Beautiful white sand beaches, palm trees. Tropical breezes and consistent warm weather. If you like those things, and enough rain, those you really don't need sprinklers. So, and low humidity, and it's never cold, and it's never really hot. And if that kind of stuff appeals to you, and then you know, beautiful ocean views and beautiful terrain and topography with very few people. I know that doesn't appeal to everybody.
No,
but if you like that sort of thing,
like who?
I would encourage
or whom?
Obviously, tongue in cheek. But we could not afford to live in Florida. We rented in Florida, and so it was delightful to point the boat eastward and say, you know, we're just going to island hop until we find what we both consider to be an ideal place to live. And it's not perfect, but it is, I'll tell you what, it is writer's paradise. And since I write most of the day and I glance out from my computer and I look across to see the beautiful sea and overlook the American and British Virgin Islands out my window, I think it's pretty nice, you know. And if you feel like you need a little exercise during the day, go out fishing and catch dinner. So anyway, I would strongly encourage anyone who is not happy with where they live to consider coming here. It's a little primitive, but you know, I like primitive. The less government, the more primitive, the more natural, the better from my perspective. Kirk, you were looking at the parallel verses in Daniel to Yeshayah 29. Yeshayah 29, kind of where we left off the last time of retreating a statement or two just to get our bearings, was, therefore, behold, as for me, I will once again, at yet another time, approach to do wonderful things with the people who are closely related, with surprising fulfillments and inspiring signs, along with that which is marvelous and miraculous. And then the wisdom and technical acumen of their scholars, theologians, and sages, as well as the discernment and understanding of their most educated teachers, shall vanish, ceasing to exist. We've read a couple of statements prior to this. that God is essentially going to blind Yehudim to his prophets. And we talked about why that is the case, which is that the Jewish religious establishment has created a mind-numbing, isolating religion that has really caused the world to be against Jews because it is so disgusting, this religion. And their religious dress up, and all of their little rites and their holier-than-thou attitude is just repulsive. And they brought a lot of wrath and misery on themselves for having done so. But at least from Yahweh's perspective, their religion is stupid. It would only fool a fool. And what God didn't want is for them to perceive what we've come to understand. For them to understand what Yahshua actually said. From what the Torah actually revealed. Because then they would be able to create a twisted religion that was somewhat credible. And just think of the damage that would cause. So God has just said, you know, your rabbis, your scholars are not only idiots, they know nothing, but I'm going to see to it that rather than their claim, which is that they alone can explain God's teachings, I'm going to desist with them. I'm going to see to it that they vanish, ceasing to exist. And what did you find in Daniel pertaining to this?
Well, I just went to one particular verse. It was 12:4, which is totally in sync with shutting it up. He starts out, but you, Daniel, shut up. He uses the verb shut up. 5640, and it's written as a sin or a thorny bush that separates things. That's the one you use to keep your sheep safe or to separate something from it. And the thing that's left of it that is being separated is the signpost along the way and the symbol of being cleansed by the set apart spirit, the mem. So you have the Tau and the mem separated from whomever Daniel he's talking, whoever Daniel is shutting these words up from, which of course is them. And then he uses these words and the seal, and seal was Chatham, and Chatham is a fixed seal or an obstruction. And interestingly enough, it is used with a chet, which is also a fence, this separating the Tau and the mem again. And it also is symbolic of when you say seal. That Chatham also means the owner's seal, which is Yah. So he's stamping his book and saying, no, it's not going to happen. I'm going to close it up to you. Then there was a really interesting word, Sephar, which is a document, and it's also a scroll, or it could be a book. But it was translated missive, and you don't use the word missive very often, so I looked it up just to see what they were talking about. And interesting, missive is a unwanted scroll document or book sealed for the future. What a powerful word to stick in there. We don't have words like that.
Yes, they are. And then it is a powerful document that was designed for the future because Jews were unable to comprehend it over the last 2,700 years.
Well,
Yod's Mizmor, haven't understood. You know, Jews take Dodes Mizmor and they recite them as they bob their heads up and down at the Western Wall. And yet they've got no clue as to how angry Dode was at the likes of them.
Mm-hmm. For the likes of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's interesting that what it ties into this work and your book is your book is primarily designed from a translation from the Dead Sea Scrolls, which are the things that are that were sealed up. So he foretold the sealing up of the Torah, Prophet and Psalms, and they were discovered later. And there, unfortunately, you have half of the Yehudim world that can't speak Hebrew or read it, certainly not with great comprehension the way you would as we go through the things the way we do it, because there's no reason to do that for them, as for the most part. And yet, yet it's those very Dead Sea Scrolls that you've used to translate for them. But they don't speak English. They speak primarily English, and it's all in English. But it's
yes, they do.
English connected to what's beautiful about the books that you're especially the Yada Yada thing is coming together quickly. I've been reading ahead a little bit on some of your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what's so wonderful about it is it gives you the English. It gives you many versions of the English. You give the directions on how you do what you do, which many of us have learned to do to one degree or another. You've got it in English. You've got the word where you can look it up. I can go to a Masoretic text online, and I can look up every number on every one and go to multiple lexicons, which I do.
Mm-hmm.
We have the letters. We talk extensively about the letters and the ancient meanings of them and the original meanings of them so that you won't get confused just because they change the letter looking, the look of the letter, the symbol of the letter. And it never fails to it never disappoints is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But all through this verse, it just until the appointed time, which now we are in the appointed time, there's no question about that, of the end. I'll just do the English version. But it'll exalt many, and they will go to and fro eagerly, quickly, and seeking knowledge and perception and wisdom and understanding will increase, resulting in their return, you know, which is the ultimate goal. That's what we're all striving for, and when they do it, Yom Kippurim. So he tipped his hand with Daniel. He said, this is what's going to happen. Now you go through this scroll and we rebuild this. He's done it throughout his whole Torah.
Yeah, I think you know, it's consistent in all of them. Like Leah brought me a statement that was in Amos 5, which specifically states the percentage of Yehudim that will survive to the end. You know, it's 1 in 10. Mm-hmm. Yehuda, I think it's much, much less in among Goyim. But, you know, the same presentation is found in Yirmiyah and Yashayah and the Mizmor throughout the Torah. It's everywhere. Malachi, Zechariah, Ezekiel, no matter where you look, the same story is told through different prophets using different words to convey the same result. And God is saying, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so it's hard to fathom that people couldn't find it if there wasn't something going on here to keep them from finding it.
Correct.
And I think
they have been precluded from finding it. And that's troubling for a lot of people to think that the God who wants to be known, the God who loves his people and wants to reconcile his relationship with his people,
would shut up his book. Yeah.
Would shut up his book to his people. But
yes,
he had no choice. Yehudim and Yisrael have become so religious, so political, so arrogant, so stubborn, so stiff-necked, so deceitful, that God had no choice but to preclude understanding. Because with understanding, they would have conceived a much more beguiling religion. And he didn't want that. You know, could you imagine what would happen if in rabbinic Judaism they actually used Yahweh's name? What if Yahweh's name was sullied by the religion of Judaism? And this works-based religion that is so demeaning to people and particularly to women. God doesn't want his name sullied by that. What if the prophets were corrupted based upon their association with Judaism? What if Paul, as a failed rabbi, actually conceived a religion that didn't contradict Yahweh but still led people away from Yahweh? Now, as it turns out, you have to be an idiot to be a Christian. It's just so obvious that Paul was a liar and contradicted God. But what if God didn't blind Jews to his prophets? So he says, your counsel and schemes will no longer be known. Those whose understanding they have tried to conceal in the dark will say, who will see us? And why will we be exposed? Who actually knows and genuinely understands the nature of our actions? And as I said last week, we do. I do.
Mm-hmm.
They're easy. to expose and condemn. Your perversions have inverted reality. Oh, boy, isn't that true of what Jews have done through Judaism, Christianity, and Islam? Your perversions have inverted reality, having turned things upside down by claiming the opposite of what is true. This is comparable to the potter's clay, continually reckoning and regarding itself such that it should claim of the one who designed and fabricated it, "He did not make me." Or should the thing conceived and created say of the one who formed him, "He is without knowledge and understanding"? You know, so many of the leading scientists promoting macroevolution, promoting spontaneous and non-guided creation, a universe without the need for God, are Jewish. And they are essentially saying that the smarter we become, the less we need to have God teach us. And so they are the fabricated who said that God is the one without knowledge and understanding. They're arrogant, presumptuous. And yet everything they say is ridiculous. I mean, there is no possibility whatsoever that life was spontaneously generated from inorganic material. There's none. It's not slim. It's none. There is no possibility whatsoever that this planet was so finely tuned to support life by accident. There is no chance whatsoever that the universe that we observe wasn't designed, and that life and its DNA wasn't designed. And when you realize that the scientists themselves, their equations regarding the cosmos are 96% errant, that with all of their vast understanding, their equations and their mathematical formulas are only 4% accurate. 96%
of the top scientists in the world.
Lie beyond their grasp. And yet, arrogantly, they'll say, "There's no need for God." And what's amazing is that 60 years ago, there wasn't one scientist in 100 that would accept the notion the universe had been created. When they found out that they were wrong and that the universe was created exactly as God said, when God said, they still denied God. It's a perfect example here of the clay on the potter's wheel denying its origin. This takes us to a new statement that we're just beginning to consider last week. Whether or not, it will take a while before, in a relatively short and subsequent period of time, a few individuals will return, and they will be restored. It will be determined that they are white when approaching a fruitful garden filled with trees. Folks, it is a matter of just 13 years from the time that we are at now in 2020. I can't tell you for absolute certain that 2033 is your 6,000 year. But it's close. Is it possible that 2030 is your 6,000 year? I suppose. It's difficult because, you know, we are trying to ascertain the time that Yahweh fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, Purim, and Shavuot. The evidence, as I've examined it from the prophecies that are recorded in Daniel, doing the math, strongly suggests that it spoke of what occurred 4 days before Pesach in 33 CE, year 4000.
Walking through the gate. Yeah.
And if you look at the timing of the days of the week, Thursday evening for Pesach Friday for its ultimate fulfillment, Friday evening for matzah, going into the Shabbat, a natural Shabbat, and the fulfillment of firstborn children on the first day of the week. The most likely year is 33 CE. And if you look at 33 CE compared to the time that Dod laid the cornerstone of the Temple of Yahweh's home on Mount Moriah, 968 BCE, you have exactly 1,000 years. And if you do the math back to Abraham taking Yishak to Mount Moriah to be a dress rehearsal for Pesach, you have exactly 40 Obel. And so you do the math, and boy, it certainly seems to point to 2030. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, we have a Roman pagan calendar, and we know that Yahweh's time for return is year 6,000 Yah. But it sure seems to overlap 2033. And we know there will be a time of Yaakov's troubles, the Shar Yaakov, and that time... whether it is a full 7 years or it is just 3.5 years, we are dealing with a time where Israel will be thinned at the waist, will be oppressed, be threatened from all sides. A terrible time for Yaakov, Israel. And that time is on our immediate horizon. The world is devolving to the conditions that Yahweh explained, and that, you know, even Damascus is beginning to become an inevitable sign of the end, as Yahweh describes it. So is the decline of America.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
well, you've also got got the UN resolution about schools. That's in print, been going around for a long time. They know exactly what they're trying to do. We've already cut off part of them already.
Yes.
Thanks to George Bush family. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's that just ain't going to happen independent of this era. And
yes.
The era is not, I mean, in a very small window of time. And what I was going to ask you, too, is how bad off can they do to lose the Yobel years? I don't think, you know,
clearly, 9
had to jump on that
CE
one.
The Yobel, 33 CE appeared to be a Yobel year, which would explain why Akiba had to have a false Messiah
on a Yobel year.
On 133, another Yobel year. Listen, I don't ever want to infer that I am inerrant in my ability to interpret prophecy, but it's certainly exceedingly close. If not exactly as we are saying, that it will be on October 2nd, 2033, that will return. I don't know if Dod is going to precede his return, although I think he is. And I don't know what the exact timing that the two messengers will arrive, and we certainly know that one is Elia, and we know that Yahweh says there was two. And he goes way out of his way not to name the other.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason for that. And we don't know what year they're going to appear on the scene, because I am not going to take my guidance from a Greek text. So we don't know when all of this is going to occur. But here's what we do know. Whether or not it will take a while, and it did from the time of this writing, this was 700 BCE, before in a relatively short subsequent period of time, a few individuals. I think we have 13 years left. Could be 10. I think it's 13. That's a very short period of time.
Yeah.
And it's only going to be a few individuals that are spared. Whether it's Amos's 1 in 10, whether it's the second statement that Yah etched in stone for all humankind that is 1 in a million, whether it is the Yeshaya 17 and 18, where it talks about the two or three from the lower vines. Yeah, the lower branches, and then, or I think that was from the upper branches, and three or four from the other branches, which is a total, you take the average of 7,000. Yeah, it could be 7,000 of the 7 million who return to Israel. Could be. But it's not going to be very many. It's going to be a relatively few individuals who are going to return and who are going to be restored. But they will be restored. I hope you are among them. It will be determined that they are white, purified and radiant. You know, I've been translating the Bereshit Genesis account of what occurred in the garden when Satan was able to misrepresent the word of God. And I've learned a lot. The translations bear very little resemblance to the ones that I wrote and edited even 10 years ago, and the commentary, no resemblance. We've learned a lot. And one of the things that we have discovered is the nature of being a psychopath, the nature of being without empathy. And actually, one of the things I learned is that in the case that Satan made on behalf of his agenda, he was projecting his flaws onto God. The textbook, it's the textbook signature of a narcissist. He was actually projecting his own personal flaws and agenda onto God, and it was just so obvious when I read it this time exactly what he was doing. But it's also obvious that not only did God allow it, but even in the very moment that he returned to meet with Adam after Adam had consumed fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and bad, Yahweh's first comment to Adam was, "Kara, I'm issuing you an invitation.
Yeah.
I'm inviting you to come home."
Respond.
Yeah, and that is exactly what is being said here. It will be determined that they are white when approaching the fruit. Is going to restore the Garden of Eden. You know, one of the things that we know is that the era of man is 6,000 years, and then we have a 1,000 years camping out with God on earth as it is restored to the Garden of Eden when approaching the fruitful garden filled with trees. That was the nature of this garden. It was filled with trees. And Yahweh is last seen walking among the trees. And while Adam and Chawa were naked and it was good, the moment that they were exposed to bad, all sorts of negative thoughts popped into their head, and they were exposed and they were ashamed. Well, Yahweh is going to whitewash us, purify us with radiant light from Lebanon. So this is Lebanon. Mm-hmm. Determined that they are white, purified, when approaching the fruitful garden.
Yeah.
Back to Eden, when approaching this fruitful garden filled with trees. That is where we're headed. It's one of the reasons why I'm so confident that, in fact, we are dealing with a 6,000-year timeline, and that 6,000-year timeline goes back to 3968 BCE. When Adam and Chawa were expelled from the garden, but with God offering them an invitation to return, and to us as well. And 1,000 years thereafter, we have the flood. 1,000 years after that, we have Abraham and Yitzhak on Mount Moriah with the dress rehearsal of the means home of the fulfillment of Pesach. 1,000 years thereafter, the centerpiece of Yahweh's plan, his chosen, the Son of God and the Messiah, living on Mount Zion, on Mount Moriah. Dode. establishing the cornerstone of Yahweh's home, so that 1,000 years thereafter, Yahweh would fulfill the Moed Mikre and the first four Moed Mikre in year 4,000 Yah, enabling all of the benefits of the covenant. In year 4,000 Yah, 33 CE, such that 40 Yobel later, the Moed Mikre would be fulfilled with Yahweh's return. In year 6,000 Yah, 2033. The plan seems to be pretty obvious, but it's coming up quickly. There isn't much time left, and very few people are going to benefit. I hope you all are among them. So in that day, the deaf shall hear, and they shall listen to the words of this book. Thereafter, it will be away from the shadows, the dysfunctional nature and spiritual unreceptivity of darkness and ignorance, that the eyes of the blind will choose to see now and forevermore. God did not blind his people forever. He just blinded them to the time of his return, so that by the time of his return, as he opened up their eyes again, it would be too late for the rabbis to corrupt them.
Smart, ain't he?
Yes. So we are reaching the time that the deaf shall hear. And what are they going to hear? The words of this book. Yeshaya, the prophet that Jews have ignored and Christians have misinterpreted, all of these years will finally resonate with the chosen people. Now,
don't you find it ironic that he's sitting there right in Jerusalem? No, don't you find it ironic?
Yeah, I know it is.
Great,
yeah, I know.
Is sitting right in the heart of Jerusalem.
Yeah, the only fully intact scroll from the Dead Sea is, and there it is, and the
on display, and nobody reads it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they can't. God said to you, we won't be able to read it.
I know.
So, one of the things we don't know, and I have a hunch that it's true, and even if it's not true, for me to be convinced that it is and devoted to it is still a positive. So there is no negative associated with this. But should this book, and this happens to be the fifth prologue of the new introduction to Yada Yah, where this is written, should it be this English translation where most Yehudim and Israelites speak English more than even Hebrew, and they're confronted with this book that presents, translates, and comments on Yeshaya and the Mizmor of Dod and the Torah and all of the prophets, then that would be a good thing. And as I say, if we're wrong and we're devoted to improving the translations and making the commentary more relevant to Yahweh's people, that's all good. There's no,
may I say something,
no negative. Yeah, the net benefit is exceedingly positive. And if all we do is point Jews back to the text of Yeshaya and the Mizmor of Dod and the Torah of Yahweh, then so be it. That's good enough for any of us. Therefore, it shall be away from the shadows. Go ahead. The dysfunctional nature of spiritual unreceptivity. People are, Jews in particular, are going to come out of the darkness and ignorance into the light. The eyes of the blind will choose to see now and forevermore. That is today.
Yes.
If you're a Israelite, if you're an Israeli, if you are Jewish, this message is for you. Open your
eyes.
Okay,
now you got 4 points there that you need to convince me that it is, rather than to backpedal at all. One of them, it is now that this is happening. Mm-hmm. It is from books that were sealed up, the Dead Sea Scrolls. It is in English, the only language that half of the Jews who are coming home, which is, well, they're the only ones that are coming home because the other half are already there. So
yeah, most Jews do not speak Hebrew. Most Jews.
Yeah, they speak English. I mean, I know a lot of them. I'm more amazed that I know more words than they do. So
yeah, that's true.
And then you have to ask yourself, there's the Choder. We found it all over the place. Who is it? And also, we know there's one. You can determine who he is and who is he trying to reach. Well, we've answered that in the first part. So it's you don't have to defend. Well, I know you're not, but I mean, I know you throw it out there. But we all said the same thing, and Jackie said the same thing, and everybody you know said, "My God, this is this deal. This is this book."
And
that's the way it has to be.
And it doesn't really matter if it's this book, this happens to be yada yada, or if it's Coming Home, or if it's Observations, or if it's Introduction to God.
But I mean, it doesn't matter because these
books are based entirely on Yahweh's books, and more on Yashaya than any other book.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Does it matter that
we're talking about a translation and commentary on Yashaya?
No.
Because to present Yashaya as accurately, as insightfully, as completely as is possible, and in context of Yahweh's overall plan, which he reinforces throughout his prophets, is a great thing for his people. And it's not like our book is different than his book.
No, it just happens to be a language we can understand and then look up the others.
Yeah, right.
So
it
isn't.
It's
presented that way. Yeah.
So hopefully what we're doing is an aid to opening eyes and to Yehudim coming home. And if not, then at the very least, we're pointing in the right direction. Giving people a brilliant light and a head start, so that they choose to translate on their own and comprehend Yahweh's testimony. So in that day, the deaf, those who have been cut into the agreement based upon what has been inscribed, shall hear. They will listen to the words of a book. Thereafter, it will be away from the shadows, the dysfunctional nature and spiritual unreceptivity of the darkness and ignorance, that the eyes of the blind shall now choose to see. It's our choice. God is now saying, I'm opening your eyes. Are you going to be observant? Are you going to look in the right place? What are you going to do with this newfound capability? Well, those who answer and respond, the straightforward and unpretentious, and that would eliminate all of the religious, shall be enriched exponentially by Yahweh, becoming jubilant. Those who have willingly eschewed political power, making themselves subject to criticism and abuse among humankind in association with the Setar Part 1 of Yisrael, shall rejoice over their favorable outcome. God is promising a return to Eden. He's going to let us back into the garden. If we're willing to forego our political alliances, if we're willing to walk away from religion and societal customs, from the influence of man, God is promising to take us back home. That's as favorable an outcome as there could possibly be. And now in a world that is tormented by terrorists, God says that indeed, the ruthless terrorists, they're going to fail. They're going to be stopped and then vanish. Those who ridicule and mock will all be gone then all who do not hesitate when it comes to that which is corrupt and damaging to the relationship shall be cut off and separated from those in the covenant. We live in a world that is defined by terrorists. Well, they're going to fail.
Correct.
It's not going to, they're not going to fail. Well, they are failing today. They have always failed. There is no benefit, no right, no gain by terrorism. It's always destructive. It's always counterproductive. It's always deadly. It's always damning. It's always deceitful. They have always failed. All terrorists have always failed. But there is a time where they will cease, and then they will vanish. Those who are religious, who mock God, who mock Yahweh, Christians mocking Yahweh in his Torah, Muslims mocking Yahweh in his Torah, secular humanists mocking Yahweh in his Torah, the law be gone. Then all who do not hesitate when it comes to that which is corrupt and damaging to the relationship shall be cut off and separated. Don't hesitate. You know, God told us early in this prophecy, don't fixate on the news. It'll make you intoxicated. It will paralyze you. The world is so corrupt. So many horrible things happening. It's so twisted, it's counterproductive for you to look. And now he's saying, don't hesitate either. Don't wait. You know, you don't have much time. And there's no advantage in hesitation. Life with Yahweh is vastly superior in every possible way to life without it. You know, so why would you want to delay? Why postpone living with God? You know, we were kidding about life here in the Virgin Islands. And, you know, it's nice here. But what makes it nice is I'm sharing it with you. Listen, you could live on a toadstool in the middle of a swamp. And if you're with you, it's going to be wonderful. And you could have the finest penthouse in the most glorious city that man ever conceived. And if you're not with Yah, it's going to be lonely and miserable. Why postpone paradise? It is. It's paradise to live with Yah. Every day I wake up to a new sunrise. You know, it's good morning, Yah. Nicely done on that one. Hey. You know, it. Why postpone? Wonderful. Don't do it. Except now. Now, God is intolerant of evil and will not accommodate those who support hypocritical bits, whether it be Black Lives Matter or the fakest Indians. Be careful whom you support, lest you lose your support of Yah. Those who have caused a man to be excluded from the relationship by missing the way through their words, and for those who argue trying to prove their case within the doorways of public meeting places so as to mischaracterize or falsify and wrongly convict, they promote and disseminate that which misleads and thrust aside, devaluing and negating, even confusing and convoluting that which is right. Religion isn't a victimless crime. Those who advocate it, God detests. If you want an express ticket to Sheol, hell, promote religion. Because in so doing, you're going to mischaracterize and falsify. By being a religious apologist, you're going to lead people away from God. And while it's one thing, you know, to be Adam, you know, it was Chawa who Hasatan went after. And Hasatan went after Chawa because he was a narcissist. Narcissists do that. They consistently use people to destroy that which is of value, particularly quality relationships. And we just want to be very careful that we value what God values, that we value the covenant, that we value his testimony, that we value his Moed Mikre, that we value his Shabbat, that we value Sukkah, that we value Eden, that we value Yisrael, that we value Yahudah, that we value Yahweh. That let's promote that which leads us back home. Let's not promote that which misleads and thrusts aside, devaluing and negating, confusing. And there's only one way we can do that. Disassociate from religion and politics and associate with Yah and prioritize his testimony. It's really not hard. For this reason, therefore, thus says Yahweh concerning the house and family of Jacob, who, to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, redeemed and liberated them through Abraham. You know, what's amazing here is that with Christianity, it exists solely because of the myth of replacement theology. That,
pretty obvious now.
Yeah, that Jews have been cast aside by Yahweh because, well, they killed Jesus. And therefore, because they didn't accept the Jesus Messiah, they were condemned by God. They would no longer be the chosen people, and that according to Pauline Christianity, God would choose Gentiles instead. Well, of course, there's a couple of problems with that myth. One is that it was the Romans, decidedly Gentiles, who killed Yosha. He wasn't the Messiah. He wasn't the Son of God. It was simply the Passover lamb. And as the Passover lamb, it was right to prepare him for the slaughter on Passover. And therefore, if Jews were complicit, we should be thanking them. Much less if Jews had the ability to kill God. Yeah, should be worshiping Jews.
They're really good.
Yeah, they are God.
Yeah.
But obviously that didn't happen. What's important is that we recognize that this prophecy, which is for the last days, these are the very last days, is Yahweh saying, I'm finally going to restore your sight. I'm going to do away with all of the religious influences. These things have not happened. They're just beginning to happen. And God says, I'm doing them on behalf of Jacob. Well, there ain't no Jacob in Roman Catholicism.
No.
You know, Jacob was the father of Yisrael.
Yisrael, let's change the name to Yisrael and all the 12.
If God's focus is on Jacob in the last days, then the whole notion of replacement theology is for naught. Wake up. You know, I'm just astounded. Trump's nominee for Supreme Court justice to replace the liberal of all liberals, Ginsburg, is a devout Roman Catholic. And that is considered to be, well, a badge of honor. And you say, how in the world, why in the world would anyone choose for the Supreme Court someone who wasn't smart enough to recognize that Roman Catholicism was a bold-faced lie? I mean, yeah. If you aren't smart enough to recognize that Roman Catholicism is the beast of Babylon, that it is the monster that has tread upon the whole world, and that it is in every possible way in conflict mm-hmm. with Yahweh. If you're not smart enough to do that, you're an idiot. Why would you want someone to judge who is an idiot?
Huh, yeah. Good question.
Well, yeah, I just flat out don't get it. But here again, we have, for this reason, thus says Yahweh. It's not says Jesus, not says Allah, not says Hashem, not says Adonai. Says Yahweh. Can you name me a mainstream religion or political platform whose basis is thus says Yahweh?
No one.
In fact,
no one.
The rabbinical types despise Yahweh's name.
Yeah.
Christians despise Yahweh's name. Muslims despise Yahweh's name. Secular humanists never use Yahweh's name. Thus says Yahweh, sets you among the few. Exceedingly few. If there's anything that we have come to know, is that there's nothing more important than Yahweh's name. You know, it was interesting. I was translating all of the commentary of Hasatan as he tried to beguile Chawa. Mm-hmm. And then of Chawa's commentary. Prior to the introduction of Hasatan, Yahweh's name was everywhere. And following the mischaracterizations presented by Hasatan, Yahweh's name appears early and often in the text. But guess where it does not appear? Hasatan never mentions it. Chawa and her corruptions of Yahweh testimony never mentions it. If you want to be among those who are judged and lost, if you want to be like Satan, don't mention Yahweh's name.
Wow.
Yeah. What other interpretation could there be of that?
You can't. You know. No, you throw his name away, and then he'll throw you away.
He'll throw you away. Now, you can't have a relationship with a nameless individual. That's mm-hmm. fantasy. Mm-hmm. For this reason,
correct.
Therefore, thus says Yahweh. You know, Yahweh is written 7,000 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. For this reason, therefore, locked in. As a result, thus says Ko Amar, Yahweh, the proper pronunciation of Yah-O-Ah, our Elohah, God, as directed by his Torah teaching regarding his Haya existence and our Shalom restoration. Concerning the house and the family of Jacob, we're in the last of the last days, and Yahweh's focus is on the house and family of Jacob, and that would be Israel, and not a church, not Arabs, not Americans, Israel.
No Chinese. Nope.
Who to show the way to the benefits of the relationship. Redeemed and liberated them through Abraham. When you mention in the same thought Jacob and Abraham, if you're connecting the dots, there's only one common denominator between Abraham and Jacob. Abraham was the father of Yishak. Yishak was the father of Jacob. And it was through Abraham and Sarah that Yahweh established his covenant. It was with Yishak through their march up Moriah on Pisac that Yahweh mm-hmm. affirmed his covenant. And then it was with Jacob, that the covenant became all of Israel. When you mention Jacob and Abraham together, you are speaking of the covenant.
No argument.
We actually have a person in our chat room who is writing in Arabic. What in the hell is wrong with them? Obviously a lost soul that would write in that disgusting language that was used to conceive the most anti-Semitic, the most anti-God text ever conceived. Wow. It's disgusting. Go away, please. If you want to speak in Hebrew, if you wish to convey Hebrew, please. That's the language of God. We're all ears. Quote Yahweh, and we're ears. Quote Satan through the Quran in Arabic, and you, friend, can go to hell. But my advice to you is to desist, because it's one thing to be deceived, as was the case with Adam. It's another case, thing altogether, to deceive, as the case with Hasatat. To deceive is to go to Sheol. To be deceived,
just
your
die.
Soul simply fades away and dies.
Mm-hmm.
For this reason, thus says Yahweh concerning the house and family of Jacob, who, to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, was redeemed and liberated through Abraham. Jacob shall no longer be confounded or ashamed. No longer will his face appear pale, being perplexed and humiliated. No people in the history of humankind have been as humiliated as Jews. They have been abused, most recently by Muslims, by secular humanists, by academicians. They have been abused by Christians. They were abused by Romans. They were abused by Greeks. They were abused by Assyrians. They were abused by Babylonians. They have been abused. And God says, it's not going to happen any longer. My people will no longer be ashamed. It is Jacob whom I'm going to reach out to once again. Because when he sees his descendants, the accomplishments of my hands in his midst, they will treat my name and as special, as set apart. The one thing the world has not done, and thankfully the reason that Yah blinded his people is because he did not want his name corrupted. He did not want his name associated with religion. Well, in these last days, the descendants of Jacob, Israel, will once again see the accomplishment of Yahweh's hands, his people, in his midst, as they treat his name as special and set apart. There really is nothing that you can do that will have as profound effect on your life as recognizing Yahweh's name. He is Yahweh. He is not Allah. He is not the Lord. He is not Jesus. He is not Christ. He is Yahweh. If you do not know his name, you do not know him. When you come to know his name, then at least you have the opportunity to be among his people. Because when he sees the descendants, the accomplishments of my hands, they will treat my name as special. And they will also treat Jacob as being set apart. It is no longer going to be the Quranic approach of all Jews must die. It will no longer be the academic approach that Jews are to be despised. It will no longer be the Christian approach that they have been replaced by their church. No. They will also treat Jacob as being set apart, just like Yahweh's name, acknowledging and appreciating his unique attributes. They will be in awe of the God of Israel. They're not going to be in awe of the God of the Moose Lines. They will not be in awe of the God of the Christians. They will not be in awe of the God of the Mormons or of the Scientologists or of the Hindus. They won't be in awe of man along with the secular humanists. They will be in awe of the God of Israel, Yahweh. Then they will come to know Yada, that they have erred spiritually and will make the proper connections to understand Bina. Even those who have grumbled and complained, being and having expressed their discontent, will continue to actually learn from this instruction. I can't tell you again that this is the book that Yahweh is referring to, or if he is referring to Yashayah as the book, or whether it is these translations and commentary on Yashayah. But this I do know, that the chosen people, Yisrael, Yahudah, shall come to Yada. They will come to know. And they will recognize that as a people they have erred, not just for a while, but for a better part of 3,000 years. And they're finally going to make the proper connections to understand. Maybe my favorite Hebrew word, Vienna, making the connections to understand, being discerning regarding the insights revealed and responding appropriately. So many Jews have grumbled and complained. So many have expressed their discontent. Well, a time is coming when Jews are going to learn. They will be taught. They will demonstrate that they are genuinely capable of literally accepting Yahweh's directions. They're going to benefit from education and respond to the guidance. Called imperfect. It is Yahweh's intent for us to learn from his instruction. It is Yahweh's desire to teach. So long as we are receptive, so long as we are willing to embrace his directions, God will guide us to the promised land. Books, well, they're repositories of instructions. They are the most effective teaching aid the world has ever known. There are so many people who prefer the spoken word. They prefer their videos online. They prefer the speeches of their pastors, their priests, and their politicians. That's not God. God has a strong preference for the written word.
Well, you can re-examine it and re-examine it and re-examine it again and again and again.
One of the advantages of the written word, Kirk, is that,
oral.
Yeah, Lamad Lakah.
Third. Yeah.
You can look up. You can just take your cursor over Lamad and Lathak, and you can put them into a search engine, and you can verify the meaning of these words for yourself. You can study them. You can verify them. You can analyze them. Lamad, you know, the shepherd's staff, the mem of the cleansing and purifying of water, the universal solvent that is water and the mem, and of course the source of life through the doorway.
Yeah.
And then you have Leketh, again, the shepherd's staff leading us to a new horizon, a new day where we reach up and grasp hold of Yahweh and walk with him.
And behold.
Yeah. For they have will be consistently taught, demonstrating that they're genuinely capable of literally accepting the directions to benefit from the education and respond to the guidance on an ongoing, active, actual, and habitual basis. Call imperfect active. Now, all of that is verifiable. All of that can't, you know, when we say it, sometimes it's difficult in the amount of time to fully process it, to understand it. But when it's written, you have all the time that you need. It doesn't matter how fast you think, how fast you process the information, you have all the time in the world from this instruction. That's why Yahweh loves the written word. And with the written word, it's enduring. Yahweh can present a prophecy 3,000 years ago through his son Dode, so that when we see it fulfilled in our day, we can know that we can trust him. And Yahweh would say,
well,
go ahead, Kirk.
No, I was going to say, you know, in the old game where you tell somebody at the start of a class and you go all through from desk to desk to desk to find out what comes out the other end, it's always wrong. It's convoluted, changed, and everything. You can prove it 1,000 ways. Anybody who thinks oral law or oral anything trumps the written word is absurd. You just can't do it.
No.
But if it's written, we're examining words that are almost 3,000 years old.
Correct.
I mean, that we're laying down in documents that you can find at least 2,200 to 2,400 years old. That is wild.
And yes. And what it enables us to do is to benefit from the words that Yahweh conveyed through his prophets as if we were there.
Mm-hmm.
When you have the written word and it's so wonderfully maintained, it's like you're listening to Dode sing to you. It's like you're listening to Yahweh speak through Yahshayah. It's like you're there with the children of Israel as Yahweh is sharing his Torah teaching. The difference is that we're in a better position than they were. They may have heard it, but look what we can do with it. We can dissect it. We can analyze it. We can make the necessary connections. We can validate it and verify it and apply it to our lives. We can challenge it. So much better.
Well, let me give you an example of what you can do. Also, even I like the letters and the pictographs. But right before that, before I learn this instruction, there's the word discontent. Reagan. Reagan is a person looking at the continuing family and the nun. But in between them is the G, which is written as a foot going the wrong direction.
Right.
There's no getting around it. That's what it means. It's totally a negative word.
Yeah, there are very few words that have a gone in it.
I'm sorry, a G. Yeah, a gimel is what I meant to say.
Gimel. Yeah. Very few letters or words have a gimel in them. Yes, that are positive.
Yeah.
I mean, so Gomorrah and Goyim happen to be examples of gimels. Walk in the wrong direction.
You can verify this any way you want. Yeah, I mean,
play
forever.
Observing somebody walking the wrong direction as they conceive children.
Yeah.
stuff. But the letters be.
No.
Now, at this time, choose to come, writing this for them, and then scribe it in a book for the last days as an eternal witness. Yeshaya Isaiah 38. Yahweh has been speaking to us in first person through Yeshaya, and so it is reasonable to assume that he is still doing so. Moreover, he has previously asked his prophet to write all of this down for future generations. So telling him to do so again would be redundant. After all, telling Yeshaya that his people will not be able to comprehend his prophecy, what's the point? Further, Yeshaya is already there in Yahweh's presence. So there'd be no point in asking him to come. Therefore, while the beneficiaries of this book are the descendants of Jacob and thus Jews, the individual writing it down for the last days as a witness could be most anyone who is willing to devote the time to do so. That is, with a couple of caveats. First, this individual would have to have been explicitly called by Yahweh to do so based upon this text. He would have had to have covered this particular prophecy in a salient way, as well as the most of Yeshaya. Since Dode's name was one of only four mentioned in this address, this writer would have to focus on his Psalms and Proverbs too. He would also have to understand why Abraham and Jacob's names were introduced and thus detail all that can be known about how we can participate in the covenant. He would have to uniquely celebrate Yahweh's name. With the mention of the feast, he would have to have explained the purpose of the seven mikre, too. And let's not forget the mandate to have detailed why Yisrael was estranged and why they will be reunited with Yahudah and then with Yahweh. And he would have to be a Gentile, too. Now, that's a lot to cover for one writer. And yet it's all required based upon this directive, especially to achieve its purpose. He would likely have to meet the criterion presented early in Yeshaya regarding the Choder. That was the 11th chapter, the entire 11th chapter. And if not this same individual, who is the Nakri of whom Solomon spoke during the dedication of the temple? Their identity and purpose coincide. Oh, and lest we forget, now that Yahweh has mentioned it, our writer would have had to have fallen in love with the purpose of the Torah, learning from it, teaching based upon it. He would be unique because God's people chose poorly. Those willing to listen, unwilling to listen for so long, those who had been rebellious and contentious, those who have preferred their Talmud over Yahweh's Torah, would need a delicious slice of humble pie. And who better to serve it up than a Gentile? Because they are rebellious and contentious people. Mendacious and deceitful children, unwilling to listen to the Torah teaching and guidance of Yahweh. Yeshaya 39. The Torah is the answer, the means to return and be restored. It guides and teaches, it enriches and enlightens, it empowers and liberates. If you want to know Yahweh, if you want to be part of his covenant family, if you want to appreciate his name, if you want to be among those who return as Yisrael and Yehuda, the answers, the directions, the guidance, it's all in one place. It's in the Torah. Torah doesn't mean law. There's nothing that you have to obey. There's no rules.
Free will.
No commands. Not a single commandment. It's all teaching and guidance. Listen to the guidance of Yahweh. Kirk, I when I got to this last statement in this, I decided that it needed to go in the prologue of Yada Yawa. I think that still in the prologue of Yada Yawa, we should probably include Yashaya 11, as it describes the reason that a Gentile was somehow empowered, enlightened,
yes,
enabled to bring this text, this message, this prophecy to God's people.
Yeah.
Because for so long, Yisrael and Yehuda have been told, don't trust a Gentile. Don't listen to them.
Oh,
and yet, with
told today,
particular Gentile, God's saying, listen.
Yeah.
Respond.
This Gentile. Yeah.
This Gentile is calling you home. This Gentile is speaking for me. He is conveying what I conveyed through the prophets that you've ignored. Yeah, he's not speaking for himself. He's not pretending to be a prophet. He is simply conveying what I conveyed to you long ago through the prophets, such that you might understand it. But I do like that idea. We're going to serve up a delicious slice of humble pie. And who better to do it than a goyim?
Well, have to get over that.
Calling his people home.
You have to. I mean, yeah, I think so. I think you put it in the introduction. Yeah.
Yeah, I think
you might as well tell them where you're coming from and where God's coming from. Y'all put it out there. You didn't write that. All you did was translate it. I mean, you may be the children, but there was. So what do you do? Every time we Google something, I mean, every time we would get associated verse, we'd find it again or something very similar to it that would point that, wow, he's really serious about this. This is, and you get down to, you know, this is it. This is what this was designed for. This is what it was, why you've had, Yahweh helps you to do this. This is why the set-apart spirit is working. She wants, and they want their children home.
Yeah.
God wants his children to come home.
Clearly, God wants his people to listen. He wants them to pay attention. He wants them to embrace his Torah. He wants them to embrace his name. He wants them to listen to him. That's what he wants.
Well, how else could it be done? It requires so many things to happen in the order that it has happened. How else could it be done? What pool of people, what group of people could you look in and say, here's a pool of people, let's select somebody to do this job? Right person, right time. You know, you've used the example of Moshe, right person, right time. There's a limit. There's a finite number of people that can do this, and maybe one. A lot of people get out of the trench and come with you, but, I mean, still, you know, it's just a finite number of people you can choose from, and wow. And that's true of Abraham. I mean, he had two other brothers. They didn't. One of them wanted to go back to Babylon. The other one just snored through life and didn't care.
Right.
And Abraham said, I'll trust you. And he only had a couple words.
I'll go
to him a little bit.
Yeah.
I'll go.
Moshe wasn't all that eager, but he said, all right.
He took a little, he had that
I'll
situation he didn't want to go back to.
We never heard any pushback from God. Yahweh said, I choose him. I'm going to anoint him, Messiah. He's going to be my guy. We never heard any pushback from him. And Dode was an anomaly in this regard, that it wasn't until later in life. I think that Yahweh extracted so much from Dode. that with all mm-hmm. of the Mizmor and the Mishpat, that after a lifetime of defending Yah's people, of revealing Yahweh's insights and prophecies, I think that the toad just ran out of gas.
Sounds like it, didn't it?
Yeah, and Yahweh didn't seem to be the least bit miffed. And even though towards the end say, "Oh my God, I've got this wonderful house," and yet Yahweh is still hanging around in the tent. Let me correct that problem. And God said, "Hey, in all of this time we've been together, did I ever say build me a house? Not once. You know, be cool. That's not what I'm about." I think that Dode is the one example where he began young at 8 years old. And by the time that he was an old man, it was more than he could endure. And finally, Yahweh says, "Okay, we're gonna take a time out, but you can rest assured Dode's coming back fully energized."
Yeah.
Dode's going
to
be
hard to fight. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. It's hard to fight every day of your life. You just wear out. You get so tired of the same crap from people all the time. I mean,
I mean,
really?
I feel energized by it. Yeah,
but you didn't start when you're 8 years old either.
But I didn't start. See, that's
a whole lifetime.
I'm more like
whole lifetime.
Moshe. I mean, I couldn't carry Moshe's sandals. But in terms of, listen, God tells us these stories because he wants us to make, all of us to make comparisons to figure out what God did and how we worked through these people and what made these people effective. And to the degree that we can emulate what God chose, so much the better. So when we make these comparisons, we recognize that, okay, Moshe was extraordinary, Dode was extraordinary, but it doesn't preclude us from learning from them. With Moshe, he started at 80 years old. You know, he was still going strong at 120. So,
tough guy.
You know, you and I got a late start. Me even later than you.
Yeah.
We got a late start. So there's no reason for us to wear out. I'm more excited about translating and insights than I've ever been. It's, you know, I can go through a text like, just looking at what Satan said, and immediately it strikes me. He's a narcissist. He's a sociopath. What he is doing is he's projecting his own self on God.
Yeah.
And what we can learn by that and understand how he works and what he wants, it's all there for us. And, 10 years ago, I missed it. What's exciting is that we have the time to go back and to learn and to reconsider. And, I feel like today I'm 1,000 times more capable of comprehending Yah's message than I was 10 or 15 years ago. Of course, now, 10 years from now, I'm gonna laugh at the difference between now and then. And that's the beauty of growing. That's the beauty of being here. But no, I don't ever grow tired of this.
I don't ever grow tired of it. Sometimes I grow tired.
I just can't wait for the next morning. No, I am like you. I don't have the ability to go late to the night. I just can't do it anymore. And so when when the sun goes down, I'm ready to take a rest. But I can't wait for the sun to come back up the next morning and to be saturated in the light. I find that I do work better in the light. I like being surrounded by the light, it's invigorating. Every day of this is invigorating. It's exciting. I feel like we've been given the most wonderful job in the history of humankind, and that there is There's no burden. There's no. Yes, it is work, but work in the very highest sense of the word. Of all the good that comes from work, of all the character building that comes from work, of all of the confidence and courage and sense of adventure and sense of worth when you're creating something. Man, I think God wants us to be justifiably proud of what we learn and share and what we accomplish together when working with Him. He wants us to rely on Him. You know, He doesn't want us to rely on Him and be stupid. He wants us to rely on Him.
He wants you
and
to put
find His insights, and then and not to hide them, but to celebrate them, and not to be sad about them, but to be joyous. This is a wonderful life. This is a wonderful job.
Yeah.
You know, we are not covetous in this. You know, the idea of owning the responsibility, if you will, of Choderdom and the Nakri and so much of what Yashaya says, that's an open invitation for everyone. Just as Yahweh shared all the reasons He chose Dod, the reason that Dod was such an extraordinary son and such a marvelous Messiah and King, He wants us to emulate, to learn from, to follow, to grow from what He shared through Dod. Just as we can grow from the guy that was hiding out there in the badlands of Arabia, herding sheep, to hide from the Egyptians, that God transformed into the greatest liberator humanity would ever know. How He transformed a nothing of an 8-year-old lad into the greatest defender of His people the world would ever know. How He took someone that no one would even listen to in Yashaya and caused him to be the most resounding prophet of all time.
That's true.
Listen, Elia was the introvert's dream. Elia was an introvert. Yeah. He spent his time as a recluse.
Cartoonist.
Every time somebody came to him, what are you doing here with me? Don't stop bugging me. And yet, man, I don't think he really liked people. And so he gave them both barrels, you know. Just I'm gonna make mincemeat of you. I'm gonna tear you to ribbons. I'm gonna expose and condemn you. And oh, by the way, I'm out of here. You know.
What a guy.
This is the way that Yahweh works. He picks people who know they're not capable, who know they have to be reliant. And then He is extraordinary in what He will share through such people. And that's the way God wants to work. It's what He enjoys. And so capitalize upon it. And as you capitalize upon it, you know, stand upon our shoulders. Reach higher. Go deeper. Share more. I mean, there is nothing, Kurt, that you and I would celebrate more than having 10 people, 100, 1,000, 7,000, Yehudim, conveying Yahweh's message and name and purpose more effectively, more forthrightly, more articulately than we are.
Be the best of all worlds.
We wouldn't say, oh my gosh, we're being replaced. Oh, woe is us.
We take off.
Oh no, we want to retain our position. No, it's a, now we can spend our time learning just for the sake of learning and sharing with those who are close around us and celebrating what we are in turn learning from those who are even wiser, closer to you. We'd love to be replaced. And,
well, you know,
and
I have a problem.
Right. We would work with them. We'd support them. We would cheer them on.
Well, sometimes I have this problem when I'm – well, it's hard, you know, for – sometimes you sit there and I start just listening. You know, I forget I'm part of this. You say something, almost wake me up. I'm saying, boy, that was really good. I'm just sitting here listening to reading this along, what we have and notes and everything. And
oh, it's really
and
smart.
Experience. You know, I enjoy it. I just like to be here.
Yeah,
it's no big deal. I just like to be
family,
here.
The most wonderful job, the most wonderful boss, the most brilliant insights. Just bask in the words of Yashayav, Moshe of Dode, to celebrate Yahweh's revelation through them. All of the goodness that is our God, the God of Yisrael, steadfast, loyal, supportive, merciful, kind, consistent, truthful, honest, reliable. Everything good.
Yeah.
Well, happy last day of Sukkah to one and all for those of us where the sun has gone down. We are now past Sukkah. It'll be a while before we'll be able to celebrate my favorite mikra, which is Pesach. But between now and there, may Yah bless. We look forward to being with you next week. May Yah be with you, Kirk, and everyone who is listening as part of Yah's
family. Thank you, buddy.
Good night.
You too.
Happy Sukkah.
Night.
Good night.
Happy Sukkah.